Hey, welcome to the Life 2.0 podcast, the first one of 2021. I'm John St. Augustine. Let's go up the down staircase in the outdoor, see if we can't just find a little sense in the senseless and the obvious buried in the absurd. Let's get to it. All right, here we are, 2021, 2021. Call it whatever you want. It's at least not 2020 anymore. I was actually thinking about doing this show for the last couple of days and starting it out with saying goodbye to the shit show that was 2020. But that would only be half true. Well, it's obvious to everybody on planet Earth at this point, for the most part, that the global pandemic wreaked havoc, which we'll get to in just a few minutes, about words that shouldn't be said anymore in 2021. And wreaking havoc, I believe, is on that list. It's obvious that that has dominated everything for the last year. And if you don't think it's dominated everything, either you're living in a small cage under a rock, buried deep somewhere, and haven't watched the news, or you're in total denial, which isn't always a bad thing, or you could care less, which maybe is even a worse thing. But here's the deal. Even though as I have gotten older, I have gotten crankier, no question. I've gotten more of a realist than an expectationist. We'll talk about that in a little bit too. I still have this glimmer of hope when the calendar changes from one year to the other. Now look, I know it's a total mind setup. It's a trick. Because the truth is, the only thing that's changed is how we see things based on a calendar that's, you know, thousands of years old and was created by a bunch of people that we don't know. And we live in by this number system of 12 months a year, and that every December 31st at midnight, as soon as we get to 12:01, we have a new slate, a blank slate, a clear slate. And if that's what it takes to make some changes, I'm all good with it. I am not big on New Year's resolutions. That comes from my experience as a personal trainer for 3, 4, 5 years, I think it was, in total. And I watched people trudge in and out of the health club, usually the first 90 days or so, January, February, and March of whatever given year, because they had made the resolution to change everything, which is a setup. Instead of just looking at one thing, they wanted to change everything. And often on that everything list was their physical appearance. And that's not possible to do, in my opinion. It's, at least my experience, it's not been that way. You know, you'll have someone who hasn't worked out their whole life, decides they've had enough of, or been sitting around for so long that they can't remember what standing up or walking is like, and they sign up for a health club membership, and they are determined to go in, and a few things happen. One is they go in and they wear themselves out. In about 2 days, they're so sore they can't walk, and they go back to being a couch potato. Or two, they expect results in miracle time, which never happens. Or three, they lose that inner burn, that inner drive to do anything, because all change, no matter how small, requires patience and courage. And most people, unfortunately, don't put those two together. So when I was in the business of training, I'd watch all these people come in with their hopes up high and ready to go and new workout clothes and a big smile on their face. And after about 4 or 5, 6 sessions with yours truly, they were like, you know, this is a little bit much for me. And I've always thought about the point of no return, where we get to saying, you know, this isn't worth it anymore, even though we had all these high hopes on the front end. So my experience back then, I think, shows me across the board that humans, for the most part, love the idea of change, but the actual steps that need to be taken to make those changes are often very, very difficult. And who wants any more of that, you know? I mean, just look at what's going on in the world. It's difficult enough as it is. However, I don't know anybody who has become successful of what they do and who they are and all those type of things that has had it easy. Easy come, easy go, as the old Bobby Sherman song says. And I'm a student of that. because it takes time that it takes. It takes patience, takes courage, takes discipline, takes about 100 things that most people aren't used to doing or sticking with during the day. And as soon as it gets hard or difficult, we bug out. Now, that's a blanket statement, no question. It's not everybody, but a majority of the people that I work with, they quit. They stopped. It wasn't worth it to them. The expectation of what they thought it would be did not match up to the reality of what it was. And therein lies the great challenge of any kind of resolution that's to be made to fill in the blank and make changes across the board. So I'm more of a strategist than making resolutions. When you have a strategy for something, you realize that it's going to take steps to get there. And are you willing to pay the price to do that? And that's really what it comes down to. I think it's a mindset that I learned from athletics for sure, playing football for so many years. You know, you learned some plays you're going to look spectacular, and the next play you're going to be on your ass. Both of those are part of the game. And you have to realize when you're going through the changes in life that sometimes they're going to be spectacular and you can go, man, I am so proud that I accomplished this. And other days you're going to go, why the hell did I even begin this route? But those are just commas, not periods in the journey. And I don't think that we've been taught enough to recognize those things. So as we sit on the precipice, which is a very good word, of 2021 and this blank slate that's out there, the truth of the matter is, and being a realist and not trying to confuse expectation with reality, is there's work to be done. Because I guarantee you, as much as 2020 might have looked like a shit show, it ain't over yet. It's not. And so the residual effect of everything we did or did not do, quote, last year, rolls into this year. There will be some surprises. There'll be some celebrations. There'll be some times we're going to get knocked on our ass. And the whole thing is about how we respond or react to this. So I try not to get into the whole Happy New Year thing. And that's fine. I mean, it is fine. And there were a couple of New Year's Eve parties that I can't even begin to talk about that were fantastic. But the point is, like I said, as we go into it, we're setting ourselves up if we think somehow magically 2021 is going to just be better than 2020 because the calendar rolled over and we pulled off December and rolled into January. So we're talking about strategies. We're talking about moves that we can make to help us get through what is in front of us, which we don't know for sure. But if you take the global pandemic off the play card last year, there was still a lot of difficulty because the truth is life is difficult. And therein lies another part of the setup. One of my favorite books by M. Scott Peck, the late great Dr. M. Scott Peck, is The Road Less Traveled. And the very first line from that book, which could have, for me, begun and ended the book, is life is difficult. Somewhere we're not really shown or taught that, or it doesn't sink in fully, and we think it should be how it is on a sitcom or something, I'm not really sure. And there's a disconnect between life being difficult and we think it should be different than it is. And we're not unable or willing to do the work to make it less difficult. And Scott Peck's proposition is that if you understand life is difficult, it actually makes it easier. When you think it should be easier and it's difficult, you don't know how to handle it. But you say, look, shit's going to hit the fan. Sometimes I'll be in front of the fan when the shit hits the fan. Other times I'm learning to get behind the fan before the shit hits the fan. And in all of that, life's hard, life's difficult, things are challenging every single day. And if you have days off from that, great. But you have to know going in that it's difficult. Otherwise, it's a setup and we go, oh my God. Because I guarantee you this. Last New Year's Day, let's even go to last January 2nd, there were so many people on social media who were convinced that 2020 was like this magical year because it was 2020, you know, clear vision, clear sight. Everything's going to come into focus and this is going to be this incredible year. Wrong. And so at the end of the year, I watched many of those same people, you know, so disappointed, but also ready for change like they were last year. So is it not a setup to say, look, we got to get out of the expectations of what we think things should be and get into the reality of what things are. Now, look, I know that might not be a popular stance. It's far easier to wave a little flag and a noisemaker and say, woohoo, here we go, wishing you a happy, magical, wonderful 2021. And then the first time you get knocked on your ass, you're going, I knew it. Same as last year. But if we go into this year knowing you're going to get your ass beat on a little bit, then it's okay. at least you could say, look, I knew this was coming in some, I don't know what form it was, but it's coming. It's some way, shape, or form. There is something coming I'm going to have to deal with. And if I don't deal with it, it deals with me. So without jumping off into the whole world of Psych 102, 101, 106, and 108, they're all, I took them backwards actually in college, but that's the deal. Without going too far into that, my point in all of this little mini rant as we open the first show of 2021 is that expectation and reality rarely, if ever, line up. If you go in knowing that and that life is difficult, look, it's going to be hard. We're going to lose people. Things are going to happen. But it's the spaces in between the difficulty that makes life worth living. That's really, at least for me, that's how I have to couch it, because it's just, any other way, it's a total setup and who wants that? It makes it more difficult. When I was getting ready to do this for the last couple of days, I thought about, you know, putting together a list of some things that I could really talk about that might make, as I've said, I don't want to ever just do these to do them. I'm grateful and beholding to the sponsors. My plan when I started this 2 years ago was 4 to 6 shows a month. And I still stick to that for the most part. But I also don't want to just jump on here and fill airspace with a bunch of, you know, verbal vomit just because I can. Trying to bring some sort of sense of value to the time that we spend together, wherever you're listening, whether you're in Chattanooga or Toronto or Australia or wherever I get emails from. I'm pleased by that, but I also don't want to ever take it for granted to go, oh, he's just blowing stuff out of his ass again. Because I don't want to do that. Life's too short for that. So as I was thinking about it today, that was my leap-off point. Put the notes away, which I rarely use anyway, and speak from my heart, which I do all the time, or at least most of the time. I'll have a couple crutches here and there, as I will hear in a minute from the Lake State University's list of banned words, or at least should be banished. We'll talk about that in a second. Just something fun to talk about, but it also shows the power of words. But this year, I almost did a year in review show. But what would be the point of that? So it was more of a year in preview show. And the preview is, don't confuse expectation and reality. We got to deal with stuff. If we don't, it deals with us. That's for sure. I mentioned Lake Superior State University. It is in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan, where I lived for nearly 20 years. And I don't know, they've been doing this for decades about coming up with words that should be banished. Phrases that we should stop using. They do this every year. And at the top of the list are these quotes and phrases. We live in unprecedented times. In these challenging, difficult times. Out of an abundance of caution. And finally, we're all in this together. According to Lake Superior State University, that's gone on for long enough. As I mentioned in its annual review, LSU in the Sioux, St. Marie, Michigan, released the 2021 edition of the top 10 words and phrases that are overused to the point of becoming insincere, useless, or cliche. And of course, for 2020, they're almost all related to COVID-19. It should surprise no one that this year's list was dominated by words and terms related to COVID, said Pete Satzmeri, the executive director of marketing communications at LSSU. He said in a statement, now more than 1,450 phrases were nominated from around the world for consideration, and 7 of the 10 phrases that the university selected for so-called banishment this year are about the coronavirus. They include, of course, COVID-19, social distancing, the aforementioned, we're all in this together, unprecedented, and any variation of in an abundance of caution and in these uncertain times. The university compiled its annual list of words banished from the Queen's English for misuse, overuse, and general uselessness since New Year's Day way back in 1976. The list seeks to, quote, uphold, protect, and support excellence in language, unquote, by encouraging the avoidance of words and terms that have been overused to the point of being baffling, irritating, or just, what the hell are you talking about? As they go on, they talk about different things. University states, they're calling for the end of certain words. Now, look, let's just get real clear. Expectation and reality. Don't expect people are actually going to stop using these words or saying this stuff. That's the reality of the deal. These are these suggestions that they came up with. But when you start looking about how we use words, the one that I'd never heard of before, that this other show that I do called The Bridge, my producer Simpsy brought up the term doom scrolling. I'd never heard of anything like that. We were doing a show about some subject that I can't recall, and she said something about, yeah, I really got to stop the doom scrolling. And I had to, wait, what? And she went on to explain, I guess, you know, in short form, without getting into it too deep on her end, it's like the tendency to surf or scroll through bad news, even though that it's news that is saddening and disheartening and depressing, and you kind of get attached to it. And you start rolling through it more and more, and you get you know, addicted to doom scrolling. What the hell? So, and if I had done it, I don't recall ever doing that. So I asked her a little bit more of a explanation, and she said, really, where it started is that she was getting all these notices on her phone from various news sources. And as you and I know, that most of the news is nothing we can use anyway, and it's mostly negative. So she was constantly being bombarded by this news that of horrible things in the world, the death toll mounting, it doesn't matter what it is, fill in the blank. And she finally had to turn off her notifications on her phone. And we got into a bit of a discussion about that. And she said, you know, I think at some point I realized I needed to know what's going on in the world so I felt safer, like I'm more informed. But the truth was she felt more and more unsafe because of all the news that was coming in without even realizing it. So it may have started out as a noble effort to, you know, I got to know what's going on. Be informed. It's important. And then after a while, when you're bombarded with stuff that you can't possibly do anything about over and over again, like every minute of every day, and it just, you can't possibly assimilate all that information. It takes an energetic toll on us. So she brought up this term doom scrolling, and I said, so what did you do? Well, I turned off the notifications, and then I had to wean myself from doing it without the notifications, meaning she would literally set aside a block of time. Like if you're trying to quit smoking, right? You cut back on the amount of cigarettes you smoke until you can get over it. I've never smoked, so I can't tell for sure, but that's kind of how I assume it would go. So she would do the same thing with doom scrolling. She would just watch it a little less and less, a little less and less, until she was able to wean herself off the news of the day. And I just found that fascinating. So on top of all the other stuff, that we mentioned with LSSUs, you know, overusage of terms and things, that doom scrolling thing I found to be the most fascinating concept that I'd heard in a very long time. So look, you know, look at the opposite ends of the spectrum here. On one hand, we can't wait for the year to begin, this new year to begin, for the calendar to be torn away from last year and to celebrate and ring in the new year. And then doom scroll to find the worst of what's going on. So in short form, I thought I would just take a few minutes today and bring those reminders to the table, as they are a reminder for myself as I sit here doing the show in the studio, that the truth of the matter is, because it's got to be about the truth of the matter, right, folks, at this point, come on. It can't just be about slapping up a headline or a meme or you know, a high five. Because if life was only that easy, it would be doable, but it isn't. And that the setup that we constantly go through, this up and down, this roller coaster ride of expectation versus reality, it's very, very challenging. It's hard on us. And then you fill in those gaps with doom scrolling, we'd be afraid to come out of the house in the morning. Life is more than that, I think. I think there's more to life than that. I wanted to just mention a few things that I was kind of deciding whether or not to follow through on, but I thought I would, at least a slight mention, because it was important to me, and maybe it'll ring a bell with you about people in your life that you may have had to say goodbye to in 2020. They come out with this big list every year of notables who'd passed away in the year, and there's quite a list, obviously, of famous people that died, and you can find that list anywhere, and all the news sources do that, you know, stars we lost in whatever year it is. But for me, I realized that it was going to be a different year, I think, on some level, when I lost my first friend, Eva Herr, back in February of 2020. And Eva was an incredible author and writer and sage and just an amazing human being. And she and I had met in 2019 about working on a book project for her. And she'd gone through a couple different people to try and get this thing right. And it was an extensive work on her life, and it was really a mirror of her life and a character based on her life. And so she was the kind of person, when she put this together, that you almost needed a degree in hieroglyphics to decipher what the hell she was talking about. So this was going to be a formidable long-term task. We both knew that. And she'd already had multiple books out. She was already a best-selling author and all those kind of things, and was working on the book and, of course, a manuscript at the same time to do a movie version, which is very ambitious. And we had talked on a Friday, a Thursday and a Friday, 2 days in a row, about the project. We were slated to start that Monday, and then on February 20th, I believe it was, I found out on Facebook, which is not the place you want to find out, that she had passed away. She was only 60. And I knew she had some health issues. I knew she was going to Atlanta for some tests or whatever. And that was that. Done. And I just had this inkling, like, pay attention, because it's going to be that kind of year. And it's been a while since I've had a year where there's been more than one person connected or close to me or friend of mine that were gone. And that was the first one. And as a little PS on that, 6 months after she passed, somewhere in there, I got a note from her daughter, Jessica, who I had sent all the information that her mom had sent me to their attorney that I had known that was working on the contract for us. And I said, you know, this is everything I have, and you might want to pass it on to her kids and you'll see what they want to do. About 6 months after she passed, Jessica got a hold of me. We had a very emotional phone call. And I encouraged her, if at all possible, while nobody could write like her mom, maybe it was part of the deal for her to finish what her mom had started. So only time will tell, really, you know, if that happens. And then just a few months later, I lost a friend of mine who was more like a brother than a friend. We went to grammar school together. We went to high school together. We bent a lot of elbows at bars together. And we were basically the same age. Phil Larson was 9 months older than me. He always called me kid because he knew it bothered me. Like, he was a lot older. He's 9 months older. Hey, kid. Funny stuff. He was a great athlete and, an incredible guy. And at one point, we had not seen each other or even been in contact for 35 years. And we reconnected, and we started working together on alumni projects for our shared alma mater, Schurz High School in Chicago. And got even closer than we were back when we went to school together. And when I met him, quite frankly, he was in pretty tough shape. He had gained a ton of weight and had some difficulties, got divorced. There was a lot going on. And the most amazing thing, though, in the last 4 or 5 years of Phil's life that I knew him, was that I was able to see him do something that is so rare. We're talking before about changing your life and losing weight and making those resolutions and getting a strategy. He actually did it. He didn't just talk about it. And I think part of that is because he was the athlete at core. This guy was a Norse god on the football field. And he wasn't that when I saw him 35 years later, but I saw him slowly chip away that which was no longer needed. It was truly a fascinating thing to witness. And he had, 3 or 4 heart attacks in his lifetime, a bunch of other problems that had gone on, and he kept bouncing back. He got his ass kicked, he'd get up. He got his ass kicked, he'd get up. And to see him resurrect himself was truly just glorious. I was so proud of him. And he did it on his own. You know, he walked, he changed his diet, he changed his attitude. He was always kind of like an Archie Bunker guy anyway, but he got to become a much more compassionate Archie Bunker. And on May 10th of 2020, I got a phone call from our shared coach, Frank Prio, that Phil had passed away. And it literally was the first time I think, geez, I can't even remember the time when a death hit me so hard that it literally, I bent to the right. I remember like kind of just taking the call and moving to the right physically, like, what? I just talked to him 2 hours earlier. And so Phil was just 62. And it took a while for that gap to start to slowly fill in for me. And when I went to his celebration of life in July, there was only a dozen of us there. I sat in the church at first. I saw his kids sitting there, and I saw Phil's picture up there and all that kind of stuff. And 12 of us sat there, and one of the things that I've always had a challenge with, quite frankly, hey, I'm spilling my guts, might as well keep with it. In the total truth-telling here, that I've never figured out, when you do a funeral, when you go to a church, there's someone who's never met you, talks like they did. You know, he's reading off a script. Phil was this, Phil was that. And I thought, it really didn't start to get good until John Maselli, Phil's best buddy, got up and really put the wood to the ball. And that's when it really hit me, that even though I knew in my mind he was gone, and physically, obviously, he was gone, when John got up and started talking about it, all of a sudden, this vacuum closed on me. And it's like, wow, he is just, that's that. We went to the cemetery, and Phil had been cremated. We all kind of joked how such a big guy got shoved into a very small hole. And to this day, I have his memorial card over here with a bunch of other people that that had left before me. And I think of him often. And that, to me, is the most comforting part of this. Eva was a little different because we were business associates. Phil and I were friends, lifelong friends. And there isn't a day that goes by that I don't look. It's so interesting how you get conditioned to things. I'll go through some old emails and stuff, and he's on those emails. And I thought, man, it's just really something. And then in September, I was in the UP of Michigan visiting my son for a few days, and Joe Laurinaitis passed away. He was one half of the tag team called the Road Warriors with Mike Hegstrand, who was Hawk. These guys were world famous, worldwide, world class. And I spent 3 or 4 years working with them in a business sense. Friendship was astronomical. I have so many memories of these two guys. And Mike died back in, 2003, I believe it is. And Joe was only 60 when he passed, as I mentioned in September. And it was another one of those kind of a gut punch deals. You know, here's a guy that I had not talked to for a few years, but we stayed in touch on and off over the years. And all of a sudden, he's just gone. It's a heart attack. Celebrating his wedding anniversary. And that was another one of those, where is the time going? What am I doing with the time that I have? And all those type of things. And it was, on top of the other two, it was another one of those, God, you know? It just gets to the point where it's like it starts stacking up on you a little bit. And in some ways, there's a numbness for me, at least, that came with it, thinking, yeah, I was right back in February because it was going to be that kind of a year. And Joe's passing really sealed off, I think, a chapter of my life when I spent with those guys. I used to watch them on TV wrestling, and then, you know, through the Walter Payton golf tournaments that I worked on with Walter, I met some of the wrestlers, the late, great Kurt Hennig, Mr. Perfect, and Ted DiBiase, the Million Dollar Man, and a couple other guys. They introduced me to Joe, and I started playing a golf tournament. All this stuff, you know, all these wide and varied and wonderful ways that people connect. And but that time with those guys was such, it literally was, what a rush. I had more fun than legally allowed with those guys, and sometimes illegally allowed, and so many stories. And I wrote about them in my first book, Living an Uncommon Life. There's a whole chapter on them, about their partnership. They were two very diametrically opposed different people. But they made it work, and their strengths and their weaknesses both came to the forefront, and it was just an incredible thing to watch. So it was tough to hear about Joe. His son James was just a little kid, you know, when I knew those guys, and I used to go to their house in Minnesota and throw James in the pool, and then James would become an all-pro linebacker for the Los Angeles Rams and would have beat my ass into the ground without any problems. So good memories there. And then finally, this one was really the capper for me last year. Hillary Ramo was a force of nature, flat out. She connected with me back when I was at Oprah Radio from 06 to 10. I don't recall exactly why or how, but I remember that's when it happened. And she was someone who was a burgeoning writer and wanted to get into the media and things like that and had a message and all those type of things. And she connected with me back then, and I helped her, as I've done for a few other people, like, here's kind of some mentorship you can do when you're getting into radio. Here's what to look for. Here's how you should approach things, that kind of stuff. And she would go on to have a really incredible career in multimedia, not just radio, because over time, radio has changed platforms. You're listening on a podcast, which didn't even exist when I started in 1997. She was a visionary artist. Her work hangs in galleries all over the world. She was an award-winning photographer. Her stuff is second to none. And author, as I mentioned, radio host, and founder at Love Breathe Earth. She did art residencies all over the planet. And she wrote a couple books. The second one was like a compilation of all her radio shows. She put like 20 interviews in there, I believe. And she asked if I would edit the book and work on it with her. And I loved to do it. She's just great. And we did all that over about a 6-month period. And I published the book for her because nobody else would. And we remained close for a very long time. And she would check in with me back and forth. And was just a staunch, upright, truthful, formidable human being on the planet. I slept better knowing she was around. Last September, when we launched The Bridge radio show, my radio experiment that really bridges, no pun intended, East and West, Chicago and Beijing, China, I knew we were going to have guests on that could help us bring the world together one conversation at a time. And Hillary Ramo was our fifth guest. And she was just spectacular. Everything that I'd watched this person grow over the years, from someone who had hoped to find their voice in the world and hoped to do some things to make the human condition better, to being that person and so fully in it, so fully complete with it. And so we did that. It was the fifth show that we did. And she brought the concept of the beginner's mind to The Bridge. And it's a concept that she learned through studying Confucianism. And the beginner's mind is something that really takes us back to the whole idea of starting over on New Year's Eve and New Year's Day. But it really brings it down to a moment-by-moment application. That if you can, even no matter how old you are or where you're at, that if you could shed the bias that has steered us for most of our life, if not all our lives, till we are conscious of it, and just begin to see things holistically, and not a this or that thing, but a this and that proposition, and that we can start looking at ourselves as part of the whole and not apart from the whole, things change. We change. The relationship to life changes. And Hillary talked all about that. And so it was a thing just last November 12th when I had found out that she passed away a few days earlier, very quietly at home with her family. And I immediately called her son, and, he was obviously, it was just a couple days after his mom had passed. I said, if you need anything, let me know. And we talked about the incredible gift that she was in the world. And when I hung up the phone with him, I thought, here we go again. Life is difficult. There's no guarantees. It is not as easy as some billboard slapped up somewhere or just wishing people Happy New Year is going to make it all better. It doesn't work that way. It's a great start, but you have to follow through on things. And every time I do a show like this and I mention people who are close to me that have passed, inevitably, especially if I'm talking with someone else, they ask me a question. They say, well, what was their cause of death? What was Joe's cause of death or Phil's cause of death or Eva's or Hillary or two or three other people that I lost this year that were close to me? What was their cause of death? And I always say the same thing. I don't care. I don't care what their cause of death was. Doesn't mean anything to me except it's a box on your death certificate. It says cause of death. There's no box on your birth certificate that says cause in life. So I don't know why there should be one in cause in death. Or we should add one and say, hey, at some point about 30 or 40 years from now, go back to your birth certificate and fill in the blank that said cause of life. What did you do with what you were given? Hillary had 47 years. Joe had 60. Phil had 62. Eva had 60. It's not long. I just turned 62 a couple days ago. And it's getting quicker. I feel like sometimes after the age of 50, it doesn't feel like 12 months a year anymore. It feels about 6, 7, somewhere in there. It goes so fast. And so I'm trying to slow it down as best I can. I don't want to speed it up. I don't need a faster computer or higher internet or 5G. Don't need it. Don't care. Nor do I care about cause of death. And so maybe a word or words that could be used in 2021 would be cause of life. What are you going to do with the year you've been given? If you're lucky enough to be here at the end of next year, how will you have used these days, 365 days a year? You know? And I ask myself the same question every single morning. It gets so redundant sometimes, but that's what builds us, our habits, the redundancy of our habits, for better or for worse. And I've been doing this. I'm sitting here in front of this microphone. There's nobody here but me. I'm in my studio. I'm looking outside. It's, you know, it's a winter day. There's a red squirrel in the tree over there, and there's some blue jays out at the feeder, and life is moving on. But I realize I've been sitting in front of a microphone since August 27th of 1997. And I've been basically saying the same thing every day, just in different forms. You know, it's the bottom line. And this is how I maintain my balance. This is how I keep my bubble in the middle of the of all this that goes on, you know. And if I didn't have this, I can't even imagine how I would do it, quite frankly. My late great friend John Powers used to talk about, he says, you know, the only reason I'm a speaker and a writer and do this high-minded stuff is otherwise I'd just be an asshole. And you know, there's a good chance if I didn't do all this, I'd be the same thing. There's a side of me that has had enough of enough. I'm done with all of it. But this other part of me, this light part of me that keeps kind of flickering now and again goes, you got to maintain this. If nothing else, it's my own salvation. That I know when I turn on this microphone, I'm, again, in a room alone, talking to myself. You did this 120 years ago? They'd lock you up. You do it now, you're walking through the supermarket and you're talking and people can't hear your, you know, they only hear your voice, and we blare everything out in front of everybody like it doesn't matter. So I guess we're all broadcasting at some point. But the bottom line is this, for me. Begin again is important, but don't wait for a certain date or time to do it. You can do it right now. And whatever it is that you want to, you know, be resolute about, have a strategy for it. One thing. Just focus on one thing. One thing, not 10, just one. And be able to measure that one thing. When I used to spend a lot more time in the gym and in the weight room than I do now, I always measured my progress by the amount of weight that I could push, whether it was off my chest, behind my neck, on the leg machine, whatever. And the only way I got stronger was by pushing against resistance. That's the only way that I've gotten stronger in my life. And that's not just limited to the weight room. Life is heavy and it's difficult. And the only way we get stronger is if we push against it in a way that allows us to grow from it. And I don't know if you know this or if you're a student of training or not in any way, shape, or form, but you don't grow while you're actually in the gym. You grow when you're not. You have to go into the gym and do what you need to do to actually break down the muscle fibers and break down the systems a little bit, and they grow back stronger. So if nothing else out of 2020 and you're still here, look at it as a workout. You know, it was the biggest experiment in human behavior modification we've ever been privy to. And we've seen who people are and who they're not. We see what is and what isn't. Don't forget those lessons, but realize that you pushed against this stuff and you were able to somehow deal it in your way and sit it down for a second, you actually got stronger. If you realize that, if you see that, if you don't, you got to go back into the gym and start over again. There's been a couple times in my life where I took hiatus from being in the gym at all, and that was a chance to give my body a rest. And that's part of the deal, too, as we go into this new year. You know, it's all going to be there. Like my friend, you know, turn off the notifications of the doom scrolling and give your brain a rest. Give it a rest, and the rest will follow. I still wish you all good things. Just know that it's expectation versus reality. It's resistance and persistence. And what you focus on the longest becomes the strongest, for better or for worst. Until next time, safe travels. Thanks for listening. Adios.